Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettina, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. I'm Dan Rettina, the founder of Dan's Papers, and my guest today is Roman Roth, who is the chief winemaker at the Wolfer Estate Vineyards. And the vineyards here on the South Fork, this is the only one that I know of, is that correct? The rest are on the North Fork. How many are up there and how many are down here?
There are three wineries on the South Fork. There is Wolfer Estate, there's Channing Daughters and Duckwalk in Southampton. And on the North Fork, there are now over 40, I think, over 42 or something.
And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was that I read that in California and the wine country up north of San Francisco, they were burning vineyards because they couldn't get enough orders to fill to make them into wine. And I wonder.
Well, there was for many years a lot of overproduction. People planted vineyards like wild, hoping the world would keep growing and growing to drink more and more. But there's a bit of an adjustment. You know, people are more health conscious until they drink a little bit less. Wine is still an important part. Anyway, so there's a lot of vineyards that are getting ripped out. In Bordeaux, for example, they're ripping out 200,000 hectares, I think. And actually, the government gives them money. You get $5,000 if you rip out a hectare. And in California, there's certainly some vineyards that were not even picked the last couple of years. It's one of these things. It's a correction, I call it. I think what happens is a lot of these huge, big wine regions were manufacturing wine like without any story, without any personality. It's like it was like a commodity, like a factory. And the public, the people want to know what they're drinking. They don't just want stuff. They want to know where it's from exactly. They want to know how it was made, how it was handpicked. They want to know the winemaker. And that's one of the great things for Long Island, because they are all family-owned small estates, which all have a story, and everybody. So it's very different to huge regions like California or, you know, in Argentina or in Australia.
Where would you place the wines that come from the Wolfer Estate Vineyards in the overall scheme of things?
Well, Wolfer Estate, we have grown a lot. Our Summer in a Bottle that has become a flagship wine that has now sold in 47 states and in 13 countries. So we've been lucky to break the glass ceiling where, again, Long Island is still a lesser known region, but it's finally up and coming. Our elegant style is very fashionable. So we make wine here in the Hamptons, right in Sagaponack, is our home vineyard with 50 acres. That's where the winery is. And then we work with 10 or 12 different growers on the North Fork, with almost 300 acres on the North Fork, where we work with the growers and we take by their grapes. And so that's the production we make, close to this year, around 95,000 cases, 12 bottle cases on Long Island. But we're very fortunate. The rosé became so popular that we couldn't make enough anymore. And we felt, well, what can we do? And Christian Wolfer, the founder, he always wanted to make wines in Argentina. And he even had some property and had some vineyards. We have now 200 hectares of land, vineyard land in Mendoza. And so that started in 2013. And we realized that we can manage this. We can make our interesting style in Argentina. And that gave us the confidence that a couple of years ago, again, when we couldn't make enough wine, we went to Provence and started to make a very elegant rosé in Provence. And what's nice is we farm sustainably here. All our grapes on Long Island are farmed 100% sustainable. They're independently certified from the New York farm. Basically, New York State has now an independently certified program. It started on Long Island and now New York took over. And if you want to be really sustainable, I always say everybody who has all their eggs in one vineyard will be bankrupt in 10 years because climate change is really affecting all the regions. You're talking about fires in California and drought. I mean, Europe has a huge problem with drought right now. And Spain is in the sixth year of drought, for example. And there's frost and there's hail. And our danger is a hurricane, knock on wood. We haven't had a direct hit since sandy and sandy, it didn't matter because the grapes were picked. So to be truly sustainable, we make now also close to 200,000 cases in France, in the Loire Valley, in the Provence, in the Loire, and in Germany. We make a non-alcoholic sparkling wines. So we have diversified the risk. As again, for a small family-owned estate, it is nice to have other things going. If God forbid we would get a hurricane or something, we have five legs to stand on. We make a lot of cider. We pick over 1.5 million apples by hand. And we make a dry, elegant, balanced ciders, and that's very popular. Also, young people love it. It brings a lot of young people to the winery. So it's again, trying to do many different things. We've been fortunate that we have owners. They love to take risks as well. So we have started in new regions, and it has really worked out very well, knock on wood.
Yeah. One of the things that the winery does is a sunset program. Describe that.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, when Christian bought Doug's vegetable patch, if you recall, where the greenhouse is on Montauk Highway. And so he wanted to run a farm stand with wine, selling wine and selling vegetables, but it just wasn't authentic. We weren't really vegetable farmers. And finally, after 2 or 3 years, we decided, can we just do wine? And then our events coordinator had the great idea, why don't we add on Fridays and band and we make Sunset Fridays? And my goodness, did that change everything? That really opened up the doors for people, embracing local wines. And this is still something very important that we're still working so hard to get Americans, New Yorkers proud of our wines here right in New York, in the Hamptons, 2 hours from Manhattan on Long Island. You go to so many restaurants that still don't carry, Long Island wine and or New York wine, or maybe one or two. Luckily, Wilfred is lucky that we are one of them, but there's so much more that can happen. You go to Hungary, you go to Croatia, you go to anywhere, they serve local wines. And I mean, this is my pet peeve that we really need to feature and be proud of our own region. And as a result, become a travel destination, to come out here. Why should I come out here to drink a steak and a Bordeaux? I can do that in Timbuktu and in every city in the world and in America. But to come out here and have local striped bass, local corn, local, you name it, and local wine is really would be a unique destination. So the wine stand is certainly something that has opened up the hearts of people and they fall in love with Wilfer Estate because it's casual and it's fun. And the wines are great. The sunsets are beautiful. The setting is amazing. And it's one way of cracking that prejudice, basically.
Describe specifically what goes on. There must be, what, hundreds of people come.
Now it's the peak, of course, in summer. It only is done in summer because it has to do with this. It starts at 5 o'clock. We have a band there, all kinds of music genres, but it's fun music. You come, it's a very open space. So you bring your own little lawn chair. You can bring a blanket. We've had Sarah Jessica Parker lying on a blanket. The floor was a bit wet, so it had rained beforehand. It didn't matter. It is just very cool. The setting, we have this beautiful rolling hills. That's why Christian Wolfer bought this land. It was the first land that, for example, potato farmers sold because it was more uneven, so the crop for potatoes was a little less because it would be drier sites, not as moist as the Bridgehampton loam across the street, for example, on south of the highway. But that is perfect for growing grapes because we don't want quantity. We don't need heavy soils. It actually was prime vineyard land. And it just is much more attractive when you're looking at a little rolling hill. On top of it, it's our top of the line where we make our Christian's Cuvée. This is our new label, by the way. We're so excited about the 24 vintage. I call this now insider trading. The 24 vintage is the best vintage we've ever made in my, I make since 45 years, I make wine, 35 on Long Island of those. And the 24 vintage was the dream year, the driest and hottest year in recorded history, and the quality and the intensity of these red wines is phenomenal. Anyway, I got sidetracked there. So it's great wines, casual. The wine stand is really something that has opened up everything.
And then when the sun goes down, the lights turn on. It's like carpet of light.
Those garlands, light garlands, so it is quite romantic. I mean, and the great thing is about Long Island and why Long Island wines are so great is the ocean breeze. I mean, why do people come to the Hamptons from Manhattan? Because it's cooler in the Hamptons, literally. You don't need air conditioning. You have this sea breeze. It feels good. So sitting outside is, if there wouldn't be this breeze around us, you couldn't sit there. It would be too hot. You need to go inside into air conditioning. That's what makes it pleasant. You want to enjoy in some of the outside. You don't want to just sit always inside in a restaurant or in your home and whatever. And so what's good for people is great for grapes. It gives our finesse, the elegance. It makes us the most food-friendly wines in America, the sea breeze. Hot climates can only dream to have our sea breeze.
You've won awards with these wines. What is the most awarded wine?
Well, what is the most awarded? We've gotten so many awards with over 90 points. I mean, there are other famous, Wine Spectator, Wine Advocate, Wine Enthusiast, and now James Suckling. And we've gotten at least 300 wines over the years, over 90, 93, 94. We just got a 96 for our Cabernet Sauvignon, which was rated best Cabernet Sauvignon in New York State. Last year we had three wines, the Pinot Noir and our Cab Franc and our Chardonnay, rated as best of category, best wines from New York State. So every year we've gotten very lucky. We've won the Governor's Cup with 97 points, our ice wine, the Dios, 2 years ago. And so we've been fortunate. And well, I always say my mother gives me 100 points every time for my wines. But it's, you have to make good wines. We can only compete with quality. We can never compete with quantity. So that was always our guiding star. Quality, quality, quality. This is the way to get trust. The wine is a long-term business. I can sell you one bottle once, but I want that you buy every year. You come and buy our bottles. And this is becoming your winery and you're proud of it and share it with your relatives and your visitors that come to visit you at home. So that's why the quality matters.
What are the different terms of creating wine between planting and harvesting? When do they occur? And is it the same every year?
Well, vines is a long-term commitment. When you plant a vine, it takes 3 years to get the first crop. Then the vine is still young and wild. Like when you're young and wild, you don't think about your retirement fund. So you just want to dominate the world and grow like mad. And then finally, when you come to our age, you worry about your retirement fund. So when the vines get older, it's easier to make high quality wine. You still can make great wines from young wines, but it takes more work and more effort and more understanding of the balance of the vigor of the vine. And that's one thing we have, Richie Pissacout. We have the best vineyard manager, certainly on the East Coast, if not in America. And he has a fabulous understanding of the balance of a vine. And that allows you to make wines. But you have to, first of all, choose what variety do you want to plant. Are you planting Sauvignon Blanc? Are you planting Chardonnay? Because you're stuck with this. Whatever you plant, you're stuck for the next 40, 50 years. So that's a choice you have to make and you have to stick to it. So in our case, we grow Chardonnay, we grow Merlot, we grow some Pinot Noir, and we work with other growers who have other varieties like Cabernet Sauvignon, for example, more Cab Sauvignon. We have some lovely Sauvignon Blanc, Malbec. So it's a really long-term decision. And then you can make different styles. Do you want to make a very light, elegant wine that you can quaff while you're at the pool, a fun, or rosé, for example? Or do you want to make a wine like these Christian's Cuvée that can age for 30, 40 years? It's a different approach in the vineyard, how much grapes you hang there, how much crop level you have, how big your yield is, how much work you do in the vineyard. It costs money to make a high-end wine. You don't have to do as much money if you want to make a $15 bottle of wine. So it's a lot of decisions. And then what do your customers want? Doesn't matter what you just want. You need to understand what your customers are purchasing and what they repurchase. You cannot, again, the key is the repeat sales. That's what makes you successful. So lots of decisions. We love, we are a young wine. We are a winery who's quite energetic. We're quite innovative. We've started making, dry rosé when everybody drank sweet rosés, for example. And we became very successful with that. We've pushed, we made the first $100 wine in 2000 when we made the first Christian's Cuvée, or at the time was Premier Cru, our flagship wine. And people said they have lost their marbles. They're charging $100 on Long Island for a wine. They're crazy. And it's the future. Again, climate change is leveling the playing field. We can compete now with the best in the world. Our climate has changed. We're ripening fruit wonderfully. So things, we always stuck the neck out. Right now, we started a group called Cabernet Cap Franc Forward with the Finger Lakes, with Hudson Valley and three wineries from Long Island, where we want to put Cap Franc on the map. Every restaurant in New York should have 5 or 10 Cap Francs. You know, they have Grünewald Lino, Albariño. Nobody heard of a Grünewald Lino 20 years ago, but now every restaurant has a Lino. And every restaurant should have, you know, Cap Franc. So this group is pushing together. We do organized tastings. We organize trade meetings. And when somebody gets off JFK at the airport, they should say, I want to taste one of these New York Cap Francs. So that's the goal. So then we started also making non-alcoholic wines. That has been a huge wave right now. That's been a fantastic new market for us. We make Spring in a Bottle. It's a non-alcoholic sparkling wine. And I have something totally new. You're the first one to see this. It's called Summer in a Bottle Zero. It's a rosé that has no alcohol. It's the most delicious non-alcoholic still wine I have tasted now, and I've tasted over 250 over the last couple of years. We work with non-alcoholic products since 96. We make non-alcoholic Verjus in 6 years now. We make non-alcoholic sparkling wines. And this is the latest. This is a game changer. First time where after removes the most gentle, the most modern technique to remove the alcohol. We make this in Switzerland. We work with grapes from the south of France with Chinson, a red grape, which is a lovely, vibrant red grape. And then we bring the finished wine to Switzerland because it has the most gentle and most efficient way. And it's really, I have not tasted anything like it. So this is coming up. So you won't know it, the alcohol is missing.
When is the harvest begin?
Harvest will start in 2 weeks with our Verjus, then in 3 weeks, the sparkling wine. Second week in September will be the rosé wave, which we pick a lot of rosé grapes. And the key is to pick it at the right time. You know, if you've had an overripe tomato, that's the worst thing to eat. If you want to make fresh rosé, you need to pick fresh and vibrant grapes. So I'm really focused on jumping on the harvest and being ready for it. And then finally, the nice thing about Long Island, we're the last area in New York State to get a frost because we're surrounded, protected by the Atlantic breeze, sea breeze again. So we can hang our red grapes till first week in November. I've picked Petit Verdot, for example, because we still have green leaves. We still have photosynthesis. It's still ripening and getting more matured in your grapes. So it's a long season. That's why I'm gray. You can taste the 94 harvest, 2002. Each one is a different harvest season.
How did you come to America to take on this project here?
Well, I was on my way to Australia. My wife, Dushi, is from Sydney, Australia. We were there. Boxes were sent there. There was a welcome party organized. And Christian Wolf, the founder of Verjus Estate, he was looking at the time to make his first wine here in 1992, basically. He planted in 88 the first vineyard, and finally the grapes are ready and you need to make wine. So he looked in California, looked around the East Coast a little bit. Some German manufacturer told him, you should go in Germany. They have some young, good winemakers there. So anyway, he reached the last week of my winemaking school. One of the professors walked around the university and said, hey, there's a job in New York. Anybody interested? And I thought, well, let me just practice my English skills. And when I go to Australia, I can say, well, in New York, they love French oak. I don't know. You always learn something in these interviews. Of course, after the secretary, it was a German guy speaking, so I never practiced any English. His first question was if I'm married. So that's illegal to ask. Well, it wouldn't be my first question. Are you a good winemaker? Maybe at the end, you want to know what's your family situation. Anyway, long story short, 3 days later, we talked again, and then he came to Stuttgart. We met in Stuttgart Echterdingen on the airport, and I had a bottle of wine with me there because I wanted to show him that I can make classic French style, not just sweet, aromatic white wines. I made a Pinot Blanc in barrique fermented, which was quite very unusual those days in Germany. And I brought a bottle of wine to the job interview, and my mother, who was also quite a character like Christian Wolf, said, well, if you take a bottle, you need to bring a cheese plate. So I'm going to this interview with a cheese plate in a cooler and a bottle of wine. And he said, well, we're 8 o'clock in the morning. Where should we go? And he said, I want to drink. I said, well, there's no restaurants open in Stuttgart. It's not Berlin. So we sat in some beautiful beer garden. We had to wipe the chairs dry from the dew. It was a sunny, beautiful, hot day, one warm day. And we opened a bottle of wine and had a cheese plate. And the rest is history. So I came and never left.
Yes, and it's been a pleasure to know you.
You've been a fabulous supporter over the years. Hats off to you. If everybody would support local wine the way you did it from the beginning, Long Island would be 10 times more famous. So I'm urging everybody to take some example from you and push New York and Long Island wine forward.
Yes, I got an invitation this Saturday to a religious service. What is that?
Well, everybody, if you want to hear an Elvis Presley gospel service in Sag Harbor at Christ Church at 5 o'clock this Saturday, what is it, the 15th? Tomorrow. I better save my voice. There will be the Presley backup singers. We have Iris Ornig, a fabulous bass player and a piano player and a drummer. It's going to be a serious mass, but a fun gospel mass. I won't quit my day job. Don't worry, guys.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. We'll talk again soon.
Dan, thank you very much and looking forward to me. See you next time. Come
Okay.
by and come and visit. Thanks, everybody.